This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Red Sox fans, here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another hot stove edition of Red Sox baseball on the Bastards of Boston. Big news of the day, Eduardo Rodriguez rejects the one-year $18.4 million qualifying offer for the Red Sox. He is officially on the open market. Anybody can sign him. They will have to give the Red Sox a compensation draft pick, usually somewhere at the end or beginning of the second round. So the Red Sox will get something if they don't, in fact, re-sign him. There was reports of a multi-year offer last week as well that the Red Sox gave to Rodriguez during the GM meetings. This is an extremely loaded topic. We've talked about it in recent shows, but we have a lot more clarity now on how things can play out, so we will be getting into that. Be a little bit of Nathan Eovaldi talk as well, and perhaps some Carlos Correa talk towards the end if we have time. So joining me this episode, Jason Kelly, Andrew Dwan. How are you guys?
I'm good. I as much as I love like the World Series and all of that, MLB offseason I think is one of the best times ever. Especially right now when it's like before everything really ramps up and there's still negotiations going on. So this is a fun time, especially for this team with a lot of question marks around it. So this is a good time.
Yeah, and the GM meetings were a lot more fun this year than they have been in years past. Usually it's absolute nothingness, but Boris did his annual, like, I don't even know how to describe what that
he
was.
He holds court.
His one-man play. I would pay $1 million to be the fly on the wall while he rehearses that in his hotel room, but yeah, so we got some news out of that, which is fun. God knows if this can be owners' meetings, but we got plenty of stuff that came out in the last week to definitely wet our whistle there.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up. Typically, the actual winter meetings where a lot of the action does go down is in December. But if that happens this year, that's after the expiration of the CBA, and there'll probably be a lockout for a little while. And according to Ken Rosenthal, there might not be many signings until February. They're saying February 1st is the true expiration of the CBA. Like, if a deal isn't done by then, things are going to be pretty intense. And then the season, at least the start of the season, could be in question because spring training won't open 2 weeks later if it's not done. So we'll get into it. Andrew, we'll lead off with you. Did you expect Erod to opt out? Was that the feeling you had? And what's your reaction to the news that just broke?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't too surprised that he turned it down. Obviously, like you had mentioned earlier, they're working on an extension for him. So hopefully this is a sign that they've had some talks, and even if it's not, we know from reports from Morosi and Heyman, guys like that, there's a lot of teams interested in him, and why wouldn't there be? He's under 30, not a whole lot of mileage on that arm. All of his injuries have been non-arm related, which that's a blessing for him. And Artie Moreno, that is where I think he's going. I think he ends up in LA. I think Artie Moreno wants to get something done. He's not worried about spending money. Clock's ticking on his core there. That is who I see being the Red Sox' biggest competition when it comes to signing Eddie back here.
Jason.
I was actually surprised that he turned on the QO. because, again, as Andrew mentioned, like, sure, he's had a lot of injuries. Granted, they haven't been arm-related, but they've been concerning. He's had knee injuries. He's had the myocarditis. Like, this is a guy who's 28 years old, approaching 29, but if I'm a GM, I'm looking at him going, you're more like 33, 34 in real years, if we're talking, like, how much longer can you get out of him? So I'm a little surprised. I think this is good for the Red Sox because at the worst, like, okay, if he turns down the offer, you're okay. Like, it's not the end of the world. That being said, the Red Sox pitching depth is not what I want it to be at this moment. If Eduardo Rodriguez was turning down this offer and the Red Sox had, you know, at least two guys in their system that you could call up and say, okay, one of them might be ready. Sure. Okay. I'm okay with that. The Red Sox don't, they don't have a guy right now that you can call up and say, yep, he's ready to slot into the major league rotation and he can pitch 150 to 180 innings a year and he can provide you some wins. Because let's face it, this is always going to be a team that wants to compete. This is never going to be a team that's looking to rebuild, especially with JD opting back in. Like, you're looking at a team that wants to make another run at it. And Eduardo Rodriguez, as much as I've been critical of him throughout this last season, like, he's a big part of that. So I'm a little concerned about him turning down the offer. I hope the Red Sox don't overextend for him. I'll say that as well. Like, given, you know, their lack of depth is a concern, but don't outbid the Angels or anyone else stupid for this guy. Like, look, he was good. You got a lot more out of him than I thought, but I hope they don't go crazy. Let's not overextend ourselves for Eduardo Rodriguez because he was really good for a couple of years. I think he's kind of tailed off. The health concerns, you know, they're a major issue for me. So I'm curious to see what his free agent market will be, because I agree with Andrew. Like, I could see some team like the Angels or anyone else that just is desperate to fill out their rotation overpaying for this guy. So I don't want the Red Sox to do that either.
I think the Tigers are a very possible landing spot for him as well. My take's going to be a little hot on this. Before I get into that, the Red Sox projected payroll, according to my calculations, about $177 million if he doesn't come back. So a little bit of money to spend, but here's where I'm coming from here. I've said on recent shows, and Jason just touched on it, we don't know what Tanner Houck is. I'm still somewhat optimistic. They will figure him out to be a bona fide starting pitcher. But if it doesn't work out, he's going to the pen, and that's one less guy you can count on. There was a lot of Garrett Whitlock talk for the rotation in 2022. Suddenly, he started having trouble getting out of one inning in big spots, in big high-leverage spots in the last month and a half or so. So my optimism on that has taken a little bit of a hit. 90-mile-an-hour Connor Siebold, no thank you. Josh Winkowski, clearly not ready yet. Brian Bello is, what, a year or two out at the very least. We have no starting pitching depth. All the depth we have is probably going to the bullpen. So during the season, I didn't feel a ton of urgency to bring him back. A year ago, I was saying, yeah, extend him now because he'll be cheap and he'll probably take it. And he wasn't approached, as far as I know. And here we are. We're a little bit undergunned. Not the greatest pitching market. And Heim Bloom has found himself on the wrong side of leverage with Eduardo Rodriguez. He's going to find himself on the wrong side of that with Rafael Devers, who's going to get well above 300, I think, which might not have been the case a year ago. So I'm a little annoyed. Is this John Lester level botching? No, this isn't that. But the Red Sox aren't in a good position next year, at least for the moment. So one other observation, you guys can weigh in on what I just said. You can weigh on this next thing. This got rejected last week, and we're finding out about it tonight. And I don't know if the multi-year offer was a response to Rodriguez rejecting it. I'd be curious to know the timeline. I mean, the Red Sox are like North Korea when it comes to tightly held secrets. We just don't know. We would need to plant a CIA guy in that front office to figure out what the hell's going on. So I'm just kind of curious to the timeline, but if the Red Sox are going to bring him back, they're going to have to pay him the most money. Actually, react to that, and I got one other take beyond this, but...
Well, I mean, they were in a tough spot with E-Rod. They couldn't give him an extension before the season. I mean, this was a guy coming off myocarditis, and I don't think anyone has ever had to come back from that in Major League Baseball history. Like, it's not like a Tommy John surgery. You're not like, all right, well, he's a year removed, he's gonna be fine. They had no idea what his strength was gonna be, if he still had strength, what his condition would be. So they were really behind the eight ball there, and they did offer him an extension when he was at his lowest point. They did what they did to Josh Beckett back in the day when they got that team friendly extension. They offered him one the same time they gave one to Barnes, and it would have been great if he took it, quite frankly, because I guarantee it's probably like $40 million less than what he's going to get now. I know it was a tough situation for a guy that, he's been in your organization this whole time. They've done a terrible job, just a terrible job drafting and developing any semblance of a starting pitcher. The last decent one was Clay, right?
I mean
you had guys that make spot starts here and there, like a Brian Johnson, but every other first round pick that they drafted for pitchers, if they made the majors, it was a reliever. They turned into a reliever, so they've completely dropped the ball on that. So that's previous regimes just kicking the can of crap down the road to this team, which sucks. But I'm very curious what the talks with E-Rod are now and how far they even got, because he might have said, I just want to test the market, and I wouldn't be surprised by that.
One thing real quick, though, he had some good pitching performances in spring training, so that would have been fine, I think, at the end of spring training. I mean, he had passed all the physicals, had a couple of good outings. I think he got a later start because he had a bicep thing or something. He had some minor injury that set him back, or maybe it was dead arm actually, but
yeah, he had that dead arm right at the end there.
He looked okay though in a couple of starts, and he was fine throughout the month of April, and then fell off the cliff at some point, I think in late May. But I don't think the risk was super high as far as extending him. If they tried to do it in January without seeing the spring training stuff, then yeah, that would have been risky. But anyway, Jason, go ahead.
Yeah, keep in mind, this ownership group is always late on extending guys. They wait until the absolute minute. They were late on Mookie. That's why he lost Mookie, because they played around with that and they gave him some crap offers. And granted, I think that Mookie asked for a little too much, but that's why they lost him. I think that Eduardo Rodriguez played this very well, and that he looked at him and his agent, which is, I think he's a Boris guy, right?
No.
So he's not a Boris guy anymore?
No.
Okay. So whoever his agent is, they looked at the Red Sox pitching depth and they said, they don't have much. They don't have much. Like, who are they going to call up to replace you? No one? So, seriously, that's what it comes down to. Eduardo meets with his agent and goes, well, they're offering me the QO. Like, should I take it? And his agent goes, no. Like, they have no one in their system. Why would you take that? You can get more on the open market. So I think Rodriguez played this really well. And I think, once again, Red Sox ownership and the brass there was a little too late. Because I agree with you guys. They probably should have offered him an extension after spring training, or they should have really made a strong push for him after spring training or early midway through the season, and they didn't. They were slow on it. Again, this ownership group, they love talented players. They love, you know, really good players, but they don't love to overextend themselves. This is going to become a problem with Devers too. Like, all the people crying for an extension for Devers, watch out. That's going to become a battle. It shouldn't become a battle. It should be an automatic. Like, yeah, we've got a superstar player. Let's lock him up. This ownership group is not like that. And they're going to drag their feet on it. So I feel like this is what happened with Eduardo. They dragged their feet on it. They took too long. And now he's a starting pitcher, a left-handed starting pitcher under the age of 30, who, yeah, sure, he's had some health problems, as I acknowledged in the last segment, but he's out there. He's out there, and his services are available. And he just turned down the Red Sox offer. So he's telling the open market, hey, I'm here, but I want at least, you know, more than the qualifying offer. I want a multi-year deal. And there are markets out there, there are baseball markets out there that want starting pitching. And they're desperate for starting pitching. And the Red Sox should be one of those, by the way. Like, as much as they don't want to admit it, the Red Sox are desperate for starting pitching. Because, again, as we said, their starting pitching depth is not good. But they'll never admit that, right? Because it's just part of how they operate, which is super annoying. But some team out there that doesn't have a problem admitting that they need starting pitching is going to reach out to Rodriguez and say, hey, we're willing to give you 3 or 4 years at this amount of money. Do you want to take it? And he'll take it. The Angels are a great example. Like, they'll offer him more than top dollar to be a part of the starting rotation, and he'll take it. And the Red Sox will lose out. So I don't like the way this is going for the Red Sox. I feel like they're going to lose him. They shouldn't have. And it's frustrating because, like I said, I was not a fan of bringing him back with all of his ancillary health problems. But you know what? When I look at the starting pitching depth, it's bad. It's not good. And you've already lost out on Schwarber. You're going to lose out on this guy too. Like, how much more opportunities are you going to lose out on in this offseason? So it's not looking good for sure.
Do we have an agreement, though, that he is replaceable by signing, like, DeSclafani or in an Alex Cobb or DeSclafani and another guy? Because I do think that replacing your three in this market, maybe not another year, but in this market, can be done.
So I agree with that. I agree with the premise that Eduardo Rodriguez is not an ace, and he shouldn't be treated as such. And can you replace him with a guy like DeSclafani? Sure. I worry about guys like that, though, because, what, he had one good year in San Francisco? He was kind of an underperformer in Cincinnati. Like, and Alex Cobb, please. I don't want it. Like, I don't want Alex Cobb back in the AL East. Like, no, I don't want that. Now, if you bring back DeSclafani and you put some other pieces around that, maybe. It's tough because Eduardo is like such a Jekyll and Hyde pitcher. Like, there are times where he really can look like he's a number two, close to an ace. And then there are other times where you're like, why are we bothering with this guy? Like, he's a waste. He's not what he used to be. So it's tough. And the starting pitching free agent market is not all that robust, especially since, let's face it, you're not going to go out and get Scherzer or any big names. If you get DeSclafani, okay, yeah, that softens the blow a little bit. How much are you paying him, though? And again, this is a guy who was in the National League his whole career. He had one good year with the Giants, and you're going to bring him to Boston to face the Yankees and all these other tough lineups, the Blue Jays. Like, I don't love that. So as much as I'm annoyed about potentially losing Rodriguez, I don't think that it's like snap your fingers and, okay, we can replace him with just anyone on the free agent market. I think it's a little bit tougher than that. So this is why I think the Red Sox are in a tough position, because they're probably going to lose him. And I don't know if anything, any move they make is going to be equal to that.
One guy that gets mentioned, well, let me mention DeSclafani. I wasn't crazy about that until I kind of dug in a little bit, but he's kind of on the Rick Porcello program where every other year is good. He is coming off a good year, 3.17 ERA, 31 starts, by the way. 2020, not great, but, you know, 2020. That was a 7.22 ERA. He had a similar ERA to this year in 2019, 3.89, 2016, 3.28. Jason makes a good point. Pitched in the National League his whole life. What's the AL East going to do to a guy like that? But if the money isn't ridiculous, I would still take a flyer. And just for the record, I probably would have wanted one more pitcher aside from Erod had we brought him back. So now we kind of need two. I mean, can you get away with one? If the stars align, yes, you could. But we'll get into that. One name that did get brought up last week, and I think it's there might be something to it, is Steven Matz, because he's a lefty. And as of this very moment, your only lefty is Chris Sale. So you're probably going to target a lefty. So I think the Red Sox are going to be in on him. He's only had really, what, a couple good seasons. And I'm not high on him. I'd be very disappointing. And I would be extremely disappointing if that's the only move you make. If that's the only addition you make is Steven Matz. I think we're coming into 2022 about where we were in 2021. I don't think we're infinitely better this year if Steven Matz is our only addition. I really don't. And I mean, Chris Sale, maybe I'm the most pessimistic guy on the show, but he can't get guys out. He just can't do it. He hasn't been able to finish guys off since August of 2018. And he's still pitched pretty healthy for a year beyond that. So Nathan Eovaldi, is he going to stay healthy again after pitching 200-something innings plus whatever he pitched in the postseason, which was quite a bit? I'm taking nothing for granted. I'm taking absolutely nothing for granted. I liked what Nick Pivetta did in the postseason, but we're going to have a conversation or two next year about whether or not he should go in the bullpen. Whether he does or not, that's a totally different thing. But he's going to fall off some cliffs, I think. And so I'm pretty pessimistic here. Unless something unforeseen happens, an under-the-radar trade maybe, I guess we can't rule that out, and then maybe I'll calm down a little bit if that's the route that they take, but...
Well, we do know a couple teams are open for business. The Reds and the A's. And the A's have three guys that are more than capable of filling in for a year. True. Manaea Bassett and Montas would cost way too much to reacquire him. But those are definitely three targets. But let me throw a name out there. One guy that didn't get the QO, and I've seen a few people, just a handful of people, you know, link him as a prediction. Carlos Rodon on a one-year offer as kind of a prove-it deal. I saw like $25 million thrown out there. That would probably – I would be pretty happy with that lottery ticket. Blow up in their face, but that's just one of those ones where if it works out, it works out great, and you're probably going deep in the playoffs. If it blows up, I think it's about a 60-40 chance, but that's something I'd like to see them at least entertain.
Now, is he definitely only going to get a one-year deal? Because I'm not sold on that. I think it's going to be at least two or three.
He's got so many questions. I don't know if he's getting – maybe he gets that two or three, but the AAV isn't what he wants. So maybe he takes higher off 1 year and gambles on himself. He's got so many directions he can go in just with how he's been treated throughout his entire career.
I love the idea of Rodon. I think Rodon – I don't look at him as damaged goods. I think that he proved this year that he's – kind of back. He's not all the way back to what he was, but he's still pretty young. And as Andrew said, he has so many directions he can go in. Like, the Red Sox could offer him like a 2-year deal with a player option and say, okay, you know, like, if you pitch well year one, then you get to choose your direction year two. Grant, that wouldn't benefit them, but maybe that's what gets him to land in Boston, because other teams might be trying to lock him into multi-year deals where, you know, it's not as player friendly. I like the idea of Rodon. I think that the need for a left-hander is big for this team, because Chris Sale, like, I just don't know how much more you're going to get out of him. And I hope that you get a full healthy season out of him next year, but who knows? Like, the way this goes, like, you can't predict that. And like I said, the Red Sox pitching depth is not very good. One guy I was looking into, and he didn't pitch this year, was Noah Song, who I heard all this stuff about, like this 24-year-old right-hander who I guess went into the military. Like, he was at one point, the Red Sox were high on him. Like, he at one point, I think guys were considering him above Brian Mata for next pitching prospect. But again, 24 years old and he hasn't been around. So that's kind of what you're looking at here. Like, you're looking at either, is Garrett Whitlock ready to be stretched out, which I don't think the Red Sox want to do that. Or are you looking at guys like Noah Song and Brian Mata, you know, or Connor Siebold, who we mentioned, who, you know, is 25 going on 26, who's never really made it in the minor leagues, let alone the big leagues. So if you're looking at a guy like Carlos Rodon, if he wants a little bit more than Erod, but he's willing to take a shorter deal, I'm okay with that.
I'd take him on a 1 or 2 year deal. That's fine. But I'm just skeptical on whether or not that could get done. And quite frankly, I'm shocked that he didn't get the qualifying offer. I'm wondering if perhaps maybe Chicago's short-term contract situation might have played into that, and they just didn't want to cough that up. But we'll see how his market develops. Another guy I like, he's a righty, though, Kevin Gausman. I'd give definitely a 4-year deal to, and he might get a fifth anyway, but another guy I'm interested in. Real quick, because I meant to bring it up, with Erod, this played a factor. I'm totally convinced this played a factor. No other player has been Alex Cora's punching bag more than Eduardo Rodriguez. He hasn't been more savage with any other Red Sox player than he has Rodriguez in post-game press conferences. I don't think Rodriguez appreciated the tongue lashing he got for the Carlos Correa thing in the playoffs when he pointed to his wrist, walked back to the dugout. I don't think he appreciated that either. I'm not saying any of this is a major factor, but I think it made him not hate the idea of possibly pitching someplace else. So I'll go that far with it, but I think it might have bit the Red Sox. Any other thoughts on pitching? Any other ideas?
No, the only thing I was going to bring up about, you mentioned the tongue lashing that Rodriguez got. So there was a theory that was brought up, and I didn't think of it until now, but do you think that maybe Cora got annoyed with Rodriguez because it was directed, what Rodriguez was doing was directed towards Correa, and maybe Cora had been talking with Correa before then about, hey, we know that you're up. We know that you don't want to play in Houston anymore. And maybe there was like a direction towards the future of offseason talks. Like, let's face it, these guys talk, whether Major League Baseball wants them to or not. So do you think maybe Cora was annoyed going, hey, don't mock him because he might be your teammate, or we might want to bring him like in the offseason after this is all done? Like, I don't know. It was a theory that was brought up. I find it interesting because I do think that Cora is still close with a lot of guys that he coached back in Houston. I'm sure he's close with Correa. We all know that Correa is probably gone in Houston. He's not going back. So I just wonder if that was part of it. That's all.
Andrew?
No, I don't. I personally don't think that's the case. I think it was not poking the bear situation, and I mean that offense definitely woke up. I think he didn't want to tempt fate. He's definitely been hard on Erod. I think he believes in Erod a lot more than sometimes Erod believes in himself, quite frankly. We've seen him leave him in big situations back in the Dodgers World Series. He trusts and believes in the pitcher that Erod can be and maybe hasn't always lived up to. That's why I think he's tough on him. I think it's just kind of like a dad giving him tough love. I don't think it's any sort of malice or contempt for the player himself. I think he just holds him to a higher standard.
Well, the only other time I've seen him get on anybody is Devers. If he's going through a bad defense spell, then he'll roast him a little bit in the media. But you don't really see it with anyone else. I mean, he wasn't particularly brutal with Perez when he probably could have been at various points in the second half. I think he was pretty soft with Garrett Richards, although Richards himself was hard on himself anyway. But I don't know. And it's an interesting observation, Jason, because I don't know if I have the timeline 100% correct here, but I think Alex Cora actually interviewed with the Red Sox, or perhaps he might have just had his interview scheduled with the Red Sox in the middle of the playoff run in 2017 with the Astros. And he even said that he was in his hotel room taking notes about the Red Sox, looking at what 2018, because that was the next season, might look like with him managing it. And he was writing notes about it. He left his notes in his hotel room, put on his Astros ball cap, went and did his bench coach job. I'm not saying I have a problem with that, but you know, maybe conversations do happen. Do you think Carlos Correa's number is in Alex Cora's phone right now? I think they text. They probably do, probably more so in the off season, but
absolutely.
But yeah, there could just be comments. Hey man, it'd be cool. Red Sox shortstop 2022. So let's talk about that a little bit, because Jim Bowden of The Athletic, covers the Red Sox, said that a former GM came up to him and heard through sources that the Red Sox might make a quiet play. That's was the exact words, a quiet play for Carlos Correa or Marcus Semien in 2022. And wouldn't be shocked if the Red Sox land one of those two players. So, Andrew, go ahead. Thoughts on that?
I mean, they absolutely should be interested in either of them. Probably Correa more than Semien. They tried to make it happen with Semien last year, and they just couldn't agree on a number. And good job, Oakland. You guys blew that one. But I don't know. I like Correa. I've always had kind of a player's crush on Carlos Correa. I thought, you know, you know what you're going to get when he's healthy. He's one of the best defensive shortstops. His arm is never a question mark, so you don't have to worry about any sort of range issues with him, getting the balls, making the throws, which I think would really help a lot of the pitchers in Boston if they knew that left side was going to make some plays, because it hasn't. It hasn't in years, quite frankly. And as far as Semien's concerned, I think he's going to be priced out. I think he's going to want $30 million, probably settle a little lower than that. But I can see like a team like Seattle or someone making a big push for him. He's older than Correa, too. If you're going to blow all that money, give it to Carlos Correa. He fills so many needs and timelines with this team, because God willing that Marcelo Meyer turns into what we think he could. That's four and a half, five years down the road. His kid's barely 18. You could then move Correa over to second or over to third, and then Marcelo comes in, and maybe that ends right when his Xander potential extension, if they bought out his opt-out, ends. You know, there's a lot of moving parts. It would be kind of hard to pull it all off, but I think that they could make a very detailed timeline that would fit into their budget workout with you having arguably one of the greatest infields ever assembled playing in Boston.
Yeah, I want them to go out to Correa, assuming that Bogarts and that he's okay with going to second, because we've heard reports of this, that he's willing to move to second base and he wants to stay in Boston. He's okay with going to second. If that's the case, fine. Go after Correa. Because I agree. Semien, to me, like, he's a little bit too pricey, and I don't know. I feel like Semien is, you know, a 2-year massive production player, and then he's just going to drop off the table after that. I feel like Correa can give you a lot more years of good production, solid production at shortstop, and he's a perfect, perfect stopgap until Mayer is ready. If this Marcelo Mayer is everything we hear about, then in the next 4 to 5 years, he's going to be major league ready. He's going to be your, whatever you want to call it, Ozzy Albies, like Dansby Swanson, whatever you want to call it, he's going to be that. And that'll work out perfectly because Correa will be over age at that point. You can slide him right in. But this all depends on Bogarts, because I just don't know. I'm not convinced that Bogarts is like, yeah, no, I'm good going to second base. I'm perfectly good with that. Like, I don't know. There's rumors of him opting out. Like, there's rumors of him wanting more money. Like, is he really going to move to second base and then sign a new contract as a second baseman? Like, I don't see that happening. Maybe this spells the end of Xander Bogarts in Boston. Like, maybe we just have to be okay with that. But I would love for the Red Sox to make a push for Carlos Correa. I think that he's exactly the kind of guy this team needs, because I've said it before, this team does not have a vocal, up-at-the-front kind of leader. And as much as we all got annoyed with Carlos Correa at times, he's exactly that kind of guy. He's a leader. He's a vocal leader. He was a leader for that Astros team. They just fell short. I think that he's the perfect kind of guy. So would I love to have him on a multi-year deal at shortstop? Absolutely. Because, again, like, who's the leader of this Red Sox team? It can't be Chris Sale. Like, I'm sorry. It can't be a guy who's you can't rely on to be out there on the mound every 5 days. As far as your offense, it's not Bogarts. He's too quiet. It's not Devers. He's too young. So if you bring in Carlos Correa, him and Cora together, I think that forms a really good leadership bond. You know, you combine that with the overall just raw talent that Correa brings, I'm all for it. So I'm a big fan of going after Carlos Correa.
I'm a hard no on Correa. I know Charlie is. I don't know where Job stands, but 2020, I mean, that was a short season, 58 games, so he missed, what, two, I think. But then go back to 2019, his age 24 season, only 75 games. Season before that, age 23, 110 games. Age 22 season in 2017, 109 games. He made the All-Star team, so whatever the injury was must have been in the second half. He's projected to get a 10-year, $300 million deal. So with injuries in his age 22 through 24 seasons, what does age 33 through 37 look like? I think Nick York is close enough, especially where you're going to have Xander for another year anyway. Jeter Downs should be ready no later than the All-Star break. I just would hate to spend that money. You're going to need that money in the coming seasons to do other things with. I would stay away from him on that money. I really would.
So the money is a concern, I agree. But the depth at middle infield is a concern too, because I'm not sure Jeter Downs can play at the major league level. Like, he struggled at AAA this year. He really struggled. Like, they were very high on him. They moved him to AAA and he didn't hit. And this is at Worcester, where even Jaron Duran looked like Willie Mays at one point. Like, he was hitting the ball out of the field, left, right. And like, Jeter Downs couldn't do it. And Nick York is, what, 18, 19 years old? He's very young. Like, I worry that they're putting too much in Jeter Downs and Nick York that – and don't get me wrong, the money with Correa is concerned because do I want to pay him 10 years, $300-plus million? No, not quite. Nope. I didn't want to do it to Mookie. I don't want to do it for Correa. But I'm not convinced that Downs and York are going to be the answer. So that's kind of where I'm like, if Correa is willing to take 6 years, 7 years even, I might consider it.
Oh, I don't think that's happening.
I was running the numbers the other day, and they actually could make it happen with the money, including a Xander extension easily for the next 5 years. Because what we're so used to for the last 20 years is the Red Sox spending their money pretty much in the outfield. A lot of their assets have been allocated to the outfield. And you can switch that up. You can give all that money to your infielders. You can give Devers 30 million. You can give Correa 30. Xander 25. You're at 85 right there. And then you have Tristan Casas making pennies. He's making 500,000. Nick York, he can project into left field. MLB Pipeline said that might even be the best fit for him down the road. So there's, you know, two guys making less than $1 million. And then you're bringing your average salaries down significantly. If you go out and sign a guy like Saya Suzuki and he works out for, you know, 4 years, 40, 5 years, 50, there's 10 million. You can push these numbers down to make them what you need them to be when to average your cost out across the board. And I mean, it's just something the Red Sox haven't done. They haven't spent that money. But like a team like the Astros has, the high price infield, we're going to see it in Toronto. We're going to see a high price infield. Obviously Springer in the outfield is going to be an outlier, but they can make the dollars work when they spread it out amongst the right players. That's the key, is giving it to the right guys and not having big dead salaries elsewhere.
Two things. Nick York finished the year in high A Greenville, so that tells me Portland at some point this year, if he crushes it, maybe Pawtucket, and then perhaps halfway through 2023 he comes up. That's probably a little optimistic, but he's flying through the system regardless. He's moving right along. And if we're going to spend on a middle infielder this year, I'm a value guy. That's how I've always been. I've been that way my entire tenure since the inception of this podcast. If Trevor Story's only projected to get a 5-year deal, that's my guy. That's who I want for that money. Because you trade him in 3 years, perhaps, if he's productive. If you really do want that Nick York and Jeter Downs infield, and I'm a skeptic on Downs, but he did close out the season well. I guess they worked on some stuff and mechanically and figured something out. So we'll see. He's gonna have a spring training invite and we'll go from there. But again, I'm just not a Correa guy. I'm an extreme pessimist. You see what's going on with George Springer right now with Toronto. And I think it's going to be similar with Correa in his 30s.
Yeah, and I'm not high on this Saya Suzuki. So I because I heard Tony Maserati mention him before. And I just... When's Shohei Ohtani? Everyone brings up Ohtani. Ohtani's a unicorn, so forget him. Like, who's the last batter to come from either Japan or Korea that actually worked out?
Hideki Matsui is the one.
Hideki Matsui, right. It's been so long. Like, Terry, as a Brewers fan, like, Kisun Hirora, he didn't work out. They sent him down to AAA at one point because right. He couldn't hit. Baltimore brought in that, what's his name? Like, Sunyu Kim, who yeah. Everyone said, like, oh, he's gonna hit, he's guaranteed 200 hits a year. Nope, didn't work out. Like, and I just don't know. I'm not like the biggest Hunter Renfro fan, but amazed that so many people in Boston are ready to like boot Hunter Renfro out of town to bring in this guy from Japan who we've never seen. Because they're like, oh, well, he hit like 39 homers in Japan. I'm like, okay, well, that translates to like what, 22 maybe in the majors if you're lucky. Like, I'm not a big Suzuki fan. I don't love the rearranging of the outfield just to make certain pieces work. And again, Hunter Renfro, you got a career year out of him. I don't think that he's a long-term solution, but whatever. He's going to make what? Maybe $8-9 million in arbitration this year. He might triple his salary. That's still not bad for a guy who hits 25 plus homers and has a gunner for an arm out there in outfield. So I'm okay with that. I'm not high on the Suzuki guy. I don't want the Red Sox getting into that again. I'm done with the Rusney Castillos and the Sunyu Kims of the world. Like, just go with what you know. You've seen Hunter Renfro play in the majors. You know that he can work in Boston. Just stick with that. I don't want anything to do with this guy.
Andrew, anything?
He's definitely supposed to be the best hitter since Matsui to come over. And he is younger than most of the players that have been coming over. Most of these guys have been in their 30s. He's only 27. He's versatile. Until, you know, a couple of years ago, he was a third baseman and shortstop, and then they moved him into right field. He goes more for average than he does for power, so he doesn't sell out. He says he doesn't like to strike out, which is refreshing to hear in today's ballgame. I don't know. The reason I wouldn't mind doing it is because if he's only going to make $2 million more than Renfro, and a team might be looking to buy some power, if you can package Renfro and a prospect to get some, you know, maybe a late seventh or eighth inning reliever, I'm selling high, because I don't think Renfro is going to do what he did again last year. And he was kind of a liability in the field at the end of the day. Don't let the gold glove crap fool you. He led the league in errors, and trust me, I was higher than anyone on Renfro going into the year. I thought he was awesome. He's a streak hitter. I don't know. I just think getting a little more athletic wouldn't be the worst problem to have, because I think you're rolling the dice with either of those guys, wondering what you're going to get back on.
Do you think that there is a team out there that would take Renfro and give you like a legit seventh, eighth inning arm for him in return?
No, I think you'd have to attach another prospect to him. Not like a top five, but, you know, maybe if it's a 40-man roster crunch situation, maybe a Jeter Downs, who knows?
I can't do that.
Well, I mean, Renfro, you got the best deal on Renfro that you're ever going to get on him, and now he's going to be average market price. Last year was, I mean, that was amazing, quite frankly. He's just not going to hold the same value in trade talks as, you know, he would have if he was still making 3.1.
Just of note, the top Asian market player, I think he comes from Korea last season, was Haesung Kim, and he had a terrible season. The Padres ended up signing him. The Red Sox were in on him, and I was a little interested to see if they might make a move on him. Batted 202, had a 270 OBP, a 73 OPS plus. So not good there. I'm trying to get how many years.
Yeah,
he got.
They didn't play him a lot though. He never got regular playing time because he was in with Cronenworth and just that whole Giant situation. But he still finished with over 2 WAR, which is pretty impressive for only having 267 at bats.
Was he the guy that ended up in Pittsburgh?
No,
Padres got him.
That's a different guy? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he played in 117 games, so perhaps some of that was off the bench. But he got, I think, a 4 or 5 year deal. I can't seem to pull up his salaries right now on Baseball Reference. But that's a deal that surely the Padres are regretting right now. Was it a major deal? No. But it's just a guy they're going to trade for probably nothing at this point and probably have to eat some salary if they want to go with their current infield. But who knows what they're going to do with Hosmer Anyway, but yeah, a guy I'm still high on. The defensive metrics I looked at and, you know, bother me a little bit, but Nick Castellanos, I think, is just going to be a beast in the middle of someone's batting order. And if it's a four-year deal, I wouldn't hate it if it's in Boston, because we still don't have a ton of outfield depth right now. So he would almost certainly have to play left field. So, but yeah. Well, we're at the 50-minute mark, so I think we can wrap on that. I'm just going to say this. I don't think there's going to be a ton happening. I think they want to wait for the CBA.
Yeah.
I really do.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's going to be a quiet holiday season for baseball.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of the CBA we can really cram down the throats of our audience. It's, you know, you figure at least half of them are more casual and don't want to be listening to the political side of baseball. But hopefully they throw us a bone here and we get to talk about at least one or two signings or trades before the current deal expires on December 1st. So,
yeah, they were saying Boris clients might. There might be one or two, which that'd be great because the Red Sox always seem to be in on Boris guys. So, yeah, that'd be a fun surprise if we got some sort of news.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll try to come up with a reason in the middle of the week, maybe Wednesday, Thursday, to talk about some stuff. And we'll see you then. Take care.